This episode of Eye on Horror was recorded just before the devastating Supreme Court decision overturning Roe v. Wade was handed down. This week's guest, Amalia, has created a collection of 13 Fight Like a Final Girl shirts, with proceeds going to abortion and women's health charities all over the country. If this cause means as much to you as it does to us, head on over to Poltergeists and Paramours, check out the line, and pick up a shirt. Or 13. Okay, enough with the liberal grifting. On with the episode. Hit it! To Eye on Horror, the official podcast of iHorror.com. This is episode 89, otherwise known as season 5, episode 11. I am your host, James J. Edwards, and with me, as always, is your other host, Jacob Davison. How you doing, Jacob?
Doing good. A little tired. I was out all night at the Child's Play Marathon at the New Beverly.
They don't call it a Chuckie-thon?
Chuckie-thon, Child's Play Marathon. You know, it's weird with the titles, kind of like they went from Friday the 13th to like Jason Goes to Hell and Jason X.
Also with us, as always, is your other host, John Correa. How you doing, Correa?
Doing all right. You know, just tired. Just up late like an idiot.
And we're recording later today than we usually do. We're all just beat.
I know. We said we're going to record a little later so we get some sleepy old bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, and then we were degents and we're up late.
Yeah,
party animals. We can't help it.
We can stay up late because we're recording late. Also, we've got with us a special guest, more than a guest, a friend of the podcast at this point. Welcome back, Amalia. Hi, Emma.
Hey guys, nice to be back.
And don't answer yet, because we also have another special guest, Emma's partner, Brandon Scullion, another filmmaker and just all around everything person. How you doing, Brandon?
I'm doing great. A little bit tired like everybody else. But super stoked to be here.
Well, we can be tired together. This is the tired podcast now.
It's Sunday morning. You're supposed to be tired.
And Father's Day.
Yeah. And Juneteenth. What are we doing recording today? We're bringing Emma and Brandon in at the beginning here because we've got a lot we want to talk to them about. And also, there's not really that much going on that we have seen. I think Jacob probably did the most with his Chuckie-thon.
Yeah. And also, I saw Paddington and Paddington 2.
Nice.
Oh, that's such a great double feature.
It was. I cried both times.
So wholesome.
They greenlit Paddington 3.
Yes, they did.
Yeah. Absolutely. So
very excited for that.
They can make as many Paddington movies as they want. Those movies are awesome.
Yeah, no, I say keep it going. I love that bear now.
How could you not? I mean, he's so adorable.
He's just so a little guy. Yeah. He's just trying to get a roof over his head.
You guys have seen the colorization of the lighthouse where Robert Pattinson is dressed like Paddington.
Yeah, he's got the hair. He's got the hat.
Yeah. They're like, oh, this is what it looked like in color. And his clothes are Paddington color. It's pretty funny. Yeah.
Similar styles.
And then there's that Twitter account where they keep putting Paddington in different movie scenes.
Yeah, the last one was RRR. It's Paddington and the two leads just hanging out.
Let's start off. The question I like to ask all guests, and Emma's already taken this, so she gets a pass. But Brandon, what attracted you to horror? What was your gateway into horror?
Oh, wow. Well, I mean, it wasn't just one gateway. There were many gateways when I was a kid. I mean, the first thing that popped into my head right now was the movie From Dusk Till Dawn. I saw that when I was in fourth grade. I watched it by myself. My mom let me watch it by myself. She rented it for me from Blockbuster. But I mean, it was all kinds of things. It was, you know, the real Ghostbusters animated show when I was a real young kid. It was reading Goosebumps, like I think is the case for a lot of young people. But there are many gateways, essentially.
From Dusk Till Dawn, she must have only watched like the first half of it before they got to the titty twister.
I watched both halves. I remember I was in third grade. I had a friend who saw it, and he told me about it. And I was obsessed with this idea of this movie about these vampires in a bar. And I was obsessed with the movie before I even saw it. And it was when I saw it, I was like, that was one movie that actually lived up to all of my dreams and ideas of the movie From Dusk Till Dawn.
Yeah, that's one of those movies. If you know nothing about it going in, right about halfway through, it just takes a left turn. You're like, oh, wait, what? Is this the same movie? Did I walk out and, you know, come back in?
Masterpiece.
From Dusk Till Dawn is always like my sick day movie. Like when I'm not feeling good or I'm in like a bad mood or something, it's always like a comfort movie.
But what about the sequels? Anyone got love for 2 or 3?
I mean, Hangman's Daughters has its moments. Don't remember too much about 2. What was it? Texas Blood Money.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one had Robert Patrick in it, right? He was the
star. And Bruce Campbell.
Yes, for one scene, one like little candidate.
I love Scott Spiegel. I think he's a wonderful human. And that's all I have to say about those movies.
I remember having a lot of fun with 3 because it played out very similarly, only it was a Western for like the first half.
It was
a
period film for it was like the 1800s.
Yeah.
If you guys haven't checked it out, there's also a really amazing documentary about the original film, the production of it called Full Tilt Boogie. It's a feature length documentary, super awesome, all kinds of cool BTS on it.
And so Brandon, how did you start making your own horror? Like, did you make short films or what did you do?
Yeah. You know, I think which is the case for a lot of people. My mom had a camcorder when I was a kid and I fell in love with it's in third grade. Again, I remember our teacher made a class movie with all the students and it took place in space. It was like Apollo 11 and a half or something. And we shot it all as a class. I have the VHS tape somewhere, but I remember it was then I sort of fell in love with like storytelling and filming. And I remember from a very early age, you know, setting up my action figures and making little plays and videos with my action figures. And then that basically evolved into, you know, high school actually making or attempting to make films. They're really terrible, but, making lots of films in high school and of course going to film school, and it just sort of spiraled and grew from there. And now I'm the best filmmaker ever.
You know, that's actually a really cool teacher that to do that project. That's like a actual practical project. That's not just teaching you math that you're never going to know again. I mean, you're open in minds. That's a cool teacher. When I was in elementary school, we had a program called video, and that's what it's called, video. And basically there was like a little TV station in the school, and you could go there and you would always do a newscast and you would draw what you wanted to be, like talent, camera. And I always was the technical director, the guy who did all the switching and cutting and stuff. So when I finally did get to film school and sat down at one of those consoles, I was like, I know how to do this.
You already knew.
it's like so weird because that it doesn't really change. The technology changes, but you're like, I know how to do this. You know, it's funny what sticks with you from elementary school. Cause like you said, you know, it was probably a throwaway project for a lot of kids, but you're like, oh, this is it.
Oh, I remember when we had this like little premiere in the classroom and every, you know, seeing everything come together, it just blew my mind. The teacher, he was an old school filmmaker. He did, you know, he would edit through 2 VCRs and I was just blown away by what he could do. We built all these sets. We built like little spaceships in the classroom that the students sat in. And it was really amazing for, you know, what a bunch of third graders could pull off.
Was the teacher a filmmaker himself?
You know, I really don't know. I know that that wasn't his first, you know, that wasn't the first class project they had done. So I don't know if it was some sort of like passion he had when he was younger and he, you know, he had to settle for being a teacher and, you know, live vicariously through his students or whatever. But it was definitely there was a great love of cinema in third grade. That's for sure.
It sounds like one of those School of Rock deals where like, you know, he wants to make movies. So he uses his students. So he gets,
I think that was
movies.
Exactly.
Yeah. Hey, yeah, you get your crews where you can find them.
Right. His name was Mike Smith, Doris French Elementary in Las Vegas, Nevada. So I don't know where he is. No idea. Mike Smith. Good luck finding that guy.
I think he's playing goalie for the Edmonton Oilers now.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, because there's probably only one Mike Smith, right?
Right, exactly. That's not a super generic name at all.
And now you have, I'm looking over you guys' IMDb. So in third grade, you made this little short with your class, and now you have 45 directed titles across from like features and shorts. And you got a new one coming out called New Hands. You want to tell us a little bit about that movie?
Sure. New Hands is a it's a feature film that's coming out later this year through Indiken Releasing. It's the story of a guy who gets in an accident at work, basically, where his hands get damaged in some sort of freak accident. But in his life, his hands are everything. It's everything to him. So when he loses his hands, he's sort of having to go through a great life change. And, you know, that just happens to include a little bit of murder. Why not? But yeah, New Hands, it started as a short film, actually, that I shot with Liesl Hansen back in 2017, I think. And it sort of grew from there. And yes, it's been a long journey, but super excited for people to see it. It's my fun little horror film. And I'm excited to start on a new one after that.
And you said it was going to get a physical media release.
Right. I don't have too many details on that right now. It's all still being worked on, and we're still sort of in the middle of delivering the film. But yeah, it's going to have a physical release and a streaming release sometime later this year or early next year.
Cool. And especially because, you know, just it feels like it's harder these days for movies to get physical releases, especially with streaming too.
Well, that was one of the big things for me. I have a love and hate relationship between physical media. I love having everything cataloged, but I hate things that take up space. So I think when it comes to my own stuff, I always, you know, of course I want a DVD or a Blu-ray release. It's such a magical feeling. And I'll never forget my going to Dark Dell's in Burbank to buy my first movie. He stocked it. I don't know Dell. I don't know him at all, really. I'm just through Anna. But my first movie had come out on DVD, and I was calling around LA just like to see if anybody had stocked it. And I called Dark Dell, and he was like, yeah, we got it. Come on down. And so I got my old roommate, Corey, and my camcorder, and I made him film me buying my own movie at Dark Dell's. But there was nothing like that. It was a really cool feeling. So yeah, it's a blessing and an honor to get another one.
Nice. Also, that was a great Dark Dell impression.
Thank you. Was it accurate?
My issue with physical media is you have to get up off the couch to change it or put it in. If I own a Blu-ray, but it's still streaming somewhere, I just pick up the remote and find it.
Same, us too. Yeah, we're always like, we don't want to go get the Blu-ray. Let's just find it on HBO or something.
How did you go about fleshing out a short film to a feature? I mean, what's involved? I mean, obviously, you don't want to just pad the running time. What was that experience like?
Well, it was easy. I remember at the time, you know, it was a story that had been with me for a very long time. I had made the short film, and I was sort of in the lurch of where I wanted to go with my next thing. And so I was like, well, you've got this kind of cool idea with the New Hands. So I remember sitting down over a weekend and putting on a bunch of old silent horror films. And that's, I sat down and I was watching those, and I plotted out the whole thing over one or two weekends. And yeah, it was sort of like finding little nuggets of ideas from the short film and seeing what could be expanded upon, what was worth expanding on, what was interesting, which, you know, it's tricky. You know, like you said, you don't want to just pad out the time. You want to keep the audience interested. So hopefully I was able to do that. But it was really, you know, it was a quick process, quicker than it normally goes. I spent about two weekends. I work during the week, so I usually save all the cool, fun work for the weekend. So I wrote it over two weekends, and then, I beat it out over two weekends, the story. And then over the next couple of weekends, I ended up writing the whole script. And it really didn't evolve once I made that whole version. The script didn't really change that much. I think I ironed out all the kinks in the sort of planning stages for it, which really helped, because it was a project that I wanted to get into quickly. I didn't want to rush into it, but I needed something, and that was what was sort of driving me at the time.
What's the runtime on the feature?
I think the final runtime is around 84 or 85 minutes.
How long was the short that you fleshed out?
Oh gosh, shorter than 10 minutes, much shorter than 10 minutes. I think it was around 7 or 8 minutes, maybe less than that.
I was just wondering how long, I mean, 84 minutes, 85 minutes, that is the sweet spot for me.
Yeah.
I mean, I there's nothing I love more than seeing a sub 90 minute movie. I'm like, yes.
Yeah, it's a rarity these days. And Brandon, I did also want to ask in regards to the story, Because there have been a lot of horror movies revolving around particularly hands and limbs over the years. And why do you think that is? And what was your own approach to the subject?
Wow. Well, I think I kind of go into it in the film. You guys haven't seen it, obviously, but our hands are what make us different from pretty much every animal on the planet. We're the only ones who have opposable thumbs. They make us basically the apex predator, and we can create art because of our hands. We create everything because of our hands. So that was sort of the approach that I took, a sort of reverence and respect for hands, if you can imagine. And trying to find the horror of, you know, the horror in having, you know, these things that are, you know, quote unquote, a perfect creation for man, having this thing be spoiled and having to replace them, or, you know, this thing that you thought was once pure and perfect and now it's decaying. That sort of appealed to me. That was sort of the horror aspect of it for me, the sort of awfulness of having something you love destroyed.
Yeah, that makes sense. And who knows? It could be the biggest hand movie since Manos, The Hands of Fate.
You're forgetting about Idle Hands.
Or The Hand.
Korea won't let you forget about Idle Hands.
Oh, no. Can't. Can't forget about Idle Hands.
Are you not a fan?
No, I love Idle Hands.
He's a huge fan.
It's one of those, I don't smoke weed, but I love stoner comedies, and Idle Hands is like one of my all time favorites. So
hell yeah. Love that movie.
How could you not? Now, you guys, Amo, you directed, and Brandon, you edited on the Fangoria Chainsaw Awards, which, you know, was a few weeks ago, but we wanted to talk about that again because you guys did a fucking awesome job with that.
Thank you.
Not only was it great seeing, you know, great pieces of work get recognized, but you guys really went at the heart of, you know, Monster Kids and the origins of everyone's love for horror. Tell us a little bit about that. What was the process of getting this all together? Because, you know, still pandemic and getting everyone in and stuff. What were some of the big challenges with getting so many people on?
It was crazy. It was so fast. When Fangoria asked me if I would direct it, they initially really wanted to do like a live event show, but then with COVID and all of the things surrounding that, it just logistically wasn't possible. But we built a set on a soundstage here in Burbank at Wolfpack Studios. And I sort of like coordinated all of the presenters for all one day. We just shot them back to back. And as you and Jacob were actually there for one day of shooting, and you know, we shot the audience separately. So we try to keep people, you know, as safe and separate as possible. COVID tests everywhere. It was a lot for a short amount of time.
It really cannot be understated the amount of work that Amalia did. She, just as somebody who was like observing, the role I had to play in the Fangoria Awards was like 5% compared to Amma's like 95%. I was only serving a vision here. Watching Amma plan and coordinate everything, it made my head spin, and it was so much to take on. And I, as always, I'm in awe of Emma, you know, watching what she can do and how she can make things happen. It's incredible. And I can't even just begin to tell you how much of that show was her and how much of it, how much heart, you know, she put into it. I'm not trying to talk for you, Emma, but just as a person who was, you know, the person who was serving her vision, it was incredible to watch. She had such a strong vision and such a strong idea of what she wanted. It was to edit the show, it was easy on my part. It was like a dream because she assembled such a great show.
What was it like trying to schedule all the presenters for, you said you did that on a different day. Was that a challenge because everybody's so busy, or?
Yeah. The amount of time we had in general was so short because we had to wait for the winners to be announced. Tallied up the voting to close. So I had to make sure that I was hopefully not scheduling anyone who was going to win an award as a presenter. And there's a lot of people that I'd asked that couldn't do it. And like, you know, it was a lot of like, you know, begging and asking for favors. Like, can you just come for like 10 minutes? We'll get you in and out, I promise.
Some of the presenters, they definitely did not just do 10 minutes because some of the makeup was incredible. The Boulets and Darcy were just like on point. Darcy's eye makeup
was so cool.
Get out of here. That was incredible. what about all the web interviews? Did you schedule all those in one day as well? Or
the winners?
Acceptance speeches
and Zoom interviews.
Yeah. So as I said, we had such a short amount of time with the winners. We had like a day's notice of like who was winning to actually filming the show. And so, you know, me and Phil Noble got on the horn as were anyone local. We're just like, hey, can you come in and, you know, accept your award? A few people could, most people couldn't. So then it was just making sure like we could logistically get the trophies there in time and then, you know, get people to film something, and nobody knew how to put them together right. Like, because the chainsaws come in pieces. And
oh, just to piggyback off that, there was a really funny one where Edgar Wright made a really funny acceptance speech. He won for last night in Soho. He put together a really funny acceptance speech, but he didn't assemble the trophy right. So Fangoria and Emma, they went at him. They're like, hey, can you guys make another acceptance video and put it together right? And Edgar Wright, like, so cool, he actually made another acceptance video. And then, I don't know, somebody had decided it was funnier, you know, assembled incorrectly. So we got Edgar Wright, fucking cool guy Edgar Wright, to make us another video. And we still just ended up going with the first one.
I was going to ask, like, for the writing of the show, you've done shorts and movies, but what was it like to write an award show?
Michael Verratti wrote the show. But I guess my involvement on that was I knew I didn't want to just give famous people shiny things, and I really wanted like a thematic element, and I was like, I really wanted it to be about like everyone's horror origins, like the things that drew us all to horror as kids, like, and then from that, what jobs we all worked as, you know, teenagers and now even, that took us from like, I love watching movies that my parents don't know I'm watching, to I worked at a video store or a movie theater just so I could get free movies. And then to like, you know, people working in the industry and making their own movies now. And I really wanted it to be a celebration of that more than just, this is the best movie of the year, or best this or best that. So.
Oh yeah. No, I love the opening montage with everybody talking about kind of their kinder trauma.
Yeah.
It's very relatable in this community. Yeah.
Now, when it comes to presenters and, you know, guests and stuff like that, how did you decide who to approach, or did Fangoria help you out with that? I mean, were the people that you know and you've worked with before, or did you just cold call people?
I think that's one of the reasons why Fangoria hired me, is because I worked with most of these people like as a photographer over the years. Because, you know, I've been a photographer for Fangoria for, I don't know, oh my God, 12 years now. So I've worked with a lot of those people. I think the ones that I didn't know that I was like really nervous about was Joe Dante. I was like emailing him and I was like, Mr. Dante, I would very much like you to come be part of this. I was so nervous. He was like, yeah, sure, I'm there.
He was super cool. Joe on set, super dope.
But he was the one I was most nervous for.
That's funny, because you would think that you would drop Fangoria's name to get people to come, but it turned out they're using you because of the people you know. It's the opposite of what I thought.
You know, since I started at Fangoria, it's had like three or four different owners. So, and the people running it now are awesome, but they're still, you know, it's still new. It's in their first or second year of ownership. And I think they're still, you know, getting that Rolodex filled up again.
Are you the senior employee out there now?
No.
At 12 years.
I mean, I feel like there's a lot of writers and contributors that could say that at this point, but no, I still freelance for them, but I think I love the people that work there. I love Phil. I love Angel. They're awesome.
And your covers are always really great. I still got the subscriber variant for the werewolf issue
that
glows
you.
In the dark. Yeah, that was such a cool cover, and how you guys had the American Werewolf from London werewolf on it too. With yeah. him. So cool.
We had actually tried to get some gnarly gore from the movie, but we couldn't get it out here in time. So Phil was like, well, it's going to be a werewolf issue anyway. And we went to Magnus Effects, McGee Effects. I think that's what it's called. Anyway, it's the guy who does a lot of the effects work for Universal for Horror Nights. And his shop is like literally like this amazing museum to like creatures. And he just like had the full size werewolf and brought it out for us to shoot with. Was so cool.
I always love those stories of, yeah, and they just had this whole, you know, the full on werewolf just in the back, you know, and just wheeled it out.
Oh, they have like everything, like full monsters, like tons of them in this shop. Like it was a wait. I'm sure, you know, everyone here has been to an effects shop and can tell you, usually they're like dusty and messy and full of plaster and this and this and this. This one was like nice. Like, you know, it was so cool to be there. It really felt like going out to like a horror museum or something that they'd set up for like Monsterpalooza.
Oh, that's awesome.
It was awesome.
And in terms of projects, I also, we're in the same film collective, Just Scare Me. I've mentioned on the show before, you know, filmmakers have a couple months to make a short, and both of you have submitted some very interesting projects over the past several months. So I wanted to ask you a bit more about that and kind of what goes into your process. And also want to say looking forward to next week.
Oh, yeah.
We same, have... us too. Definitely.
New shorts for everybody.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the group for me has been super incredible. I don't know if you want me to just talk about it a little bit, but yeah, Amma had known Buzz Wallach and several of these filmmakers, and they started this group, Just Scare Me. And it's been, for me, a really, I wouldn't say life-changing, but it's definitely something that reinvigorated my love of being creative and storytelling.
Yeah, for me, it's been really instrumental in me as a filmmaker. Sort of when I started with the group, when Buzz started it in like 2019 and it asked me to do it, I had never shot anything without a crew. I'd never, you know, been my own camera person or my own, you know, DP, or had, you know, really, I'd really depended on other people. And I felt my worth as a filmmaker was only in the crew that I could get. And so it's really taught me how to do, not only like learn how to do everything myself, but also given me the confidence to know that I can. And I think that's been huge in my career and moving forward. You know, it's made me feel like a way better filmmaker.
It also helps you communicate better when you are working with a crew. That's one thing in film school. I tried to get my hands on as many different jobs as possible, because it always helps to be able to talk to a DP like a DP, mm-hmm. you know, as a director or something. Yeah. So that it's good stuff to know.
It is. It's, and you know, I have a master's degree in photography, not film. So it's always sort of felt like a learning curve to me in some way. But I think that it's something that I'm so thankful for, the experience of doing it. And, you know, moving forward, I feel like Brandon and I have really become this like two-man band where we do everything on each other's projects, and it's made us both a lot stronger as filmmakers.
Well, I can definitely see that, especially having watched your collective works the past several months.
Well, thank you.
It's always great having a go-to partner in crime, especially one who can kind of take up the reins on different aspects that, you know, you might not be so great at. Like my team, we're very much so that I'm a terrible editor. I don't know computers well. Yeah. Jake can attest to this every time we record an episode. I'm usually the one that messes up my settings.
So. I'm the same. Anything with a computer, forget about it. I hate it. I suck at it. Yeah. I had a temper tantrum about my headphones this morning.
If we need to print something, no.
No, you know what, Emma does? She does have the printer, actually. She did set up the printer.
Ah. See, you got me super beat there. I'm the one who's cursing, like, why are we making 3D printers when we can't even get 2D printers right? Fuck.
That's, I sympathize with that 100%. Like, I am not a technical wizard by any means.
Korea once sent me an audio file and it was blank. And then he sent me a screenshot of what it was. So what am I doing wrong? I'm like, oh, well, the volume was down when you saved it.
Yeah,
because I'm actually a sound guy. That's what I do mostly. So, I mean, I guess if there's one thing for him to mess up with us, it's going to be something like that, because I can tell right away. I'm like, oh, here's your issue.
Sound is so critical, man. God bless you. Sound is, in my opinion, the most important job on set is getting good sound. Everything else is easy as far as I'm concerned.
We had a saying in film school, sound is half your movie.
Yep. Agree. Completely agree.
Yep.
In Just Scare Me, we have a saying called fuck sound.
Not all of us believe that.
Just ADR it all.
Yeah. We have. You
know, sometimes we have done that and it works. It worked for Anna's last film. That was sort of the style we went with.
Oh, no. Remember our first short film we ever directed together and the sound work at all?
Which one? Fun Size Treat.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
We had to ADR the whole thing.
Like 10 months into our relationship, we had already like started directing stuff together, and we did like this Halloween film together, a totally guerrilla style. We shot in front of some rando's house in Burbank. Like, they have no idea a whole short film was shot in front of their house because of their Halloween lights. But anyway, so it wasn't a catastrophe. The shoot and the film came out really good, I think, but sound, it just didn't work out that night. I think because we were planning on me operating camera, but Amber had to operate and I had to end up sitting in the back seat with sound. The next day we were like, oh, this all sounds terrible. So yeah, we ended up doing ADR for the whole film, but in a weird way, it all came together really well.
Yeah.
It probably sounded better with ADR.
Well, it was good. We just did it. We did all the ADR in the car, so you couldn't tell the difference. Like,
okay.
We literally just had the guy and we just, to get the most authentic recreation of what we did, we had them both come into the car. And Amma sat in the back seat. I was in the driver's seat and we just recorded ADR in the car and it worked out perfect.
Man, you know, a lot of people say, you know, don't go to IKEA to test your relationship early. you guys are directing movies within a year together. Like,
yeah.
That's a relationship test right there.
Surprisingly, of all the films we've worked on together, those are the least stressful parts of our relationship.
Yeah, filmmaking stuff, we don't really bicker or fight too much. I think we're both sort of the mindset of like, get it done.
Well, we're also very respectful of each other's ideas as well. Like, if I'm working on one of Amma's projects, I want to, you know, as a man, there's a tendency to want to just take over things. And I really have to stop myself and catch myself from doing that. And I want to make sure I'm being as respectful to her and her process as I can be. So, you know, if somebody, I don't know if this is info you're looking for, but if somebody, like, for instance, if we're on the Fangoria set, it was my responsibility to be as respectful to her as possible, so everybody else could see me being respectful. And I think that's one of the things you sort of have to combat with a female filmmaker, right, Emma? I mean, I don't mean to speak out of
tune. Yeah. No, you're right.
Respect is a huge issue on set. So, you know, having that foundation of being on set with Emma and knowing how strong her vision is, that's something I don't want to mess with. That's why we watch Emma Leah films, because they're Emma Leah films, you know? So our working relationship has always been sort of off the table, in my opinion, in terms of arguments and stuff. Her work is her work. My work is my work. We don't fuck with each other's work, basically.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's probably all about recognizing whose vision you're working on and, you know, not getting in the way. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, you know, we, we try to not give each other notes unless they're asked for. I mean, there's times like, you know, the other day he's editing something. I was like, oh, I wish I could see that a little bit better. And he's like, how dare you? And then, like, I look and he's like over there editing it so you can actually see it better.
Well, that's the thing. Like, Emma has, you know, pretty much every idea Emma has is great. And I'm just too, like,
okay.
I'm like, it wasn't that great of an idea.
Let me try that out a little bit.
Yeah. Oh my God, she's fucking brilliant.
No, and you can definitely see how great you guys are as a team and with your crew, because like you said earlier, Jacob and I were there to be a part of the monster audience for the Chainsaw Awards, and I had an absolute blast. Got to bring my skeleton out and just like,
oh my God,
so much fun.
Oh my God, was that you?
Yeah.
Oh my God, that you're my favorite person. All right, cool. All right,
yeah. That's a Bones McCoy is my non-binary skeleton.
I made sure we cut to you several times. I was like, babe, we got to get this guy in the show.
Oh, yeah, man. He thought you were hilarious. He was just like, look at him, he's so good. Look at the skeleton. He's a
fucking skeleton.
Oh man, I spent so much time on her wig. It just like was all mad because she hangs out on our porch all the time. We used to, when we lived in the front of the building, we used to dress her up with each holiday for people walking by and whatnot. But now we're kind of in the back now. So she just enjoys sitting in the sun and the shade, you know, from the trees. But
she had her time to shine.
Bones has an Instagram, doesn't she?
Yeah, but she's not active.
Oh.
Oh my God.
We like to joke around that she parties too much and keeps forgetting she has an Insta following.
She's too big of an influencer.
Yeah, no, it was so much fun to see. I will admit, I was working when it first premiered, so I was like running in and out of the room to catch things. And the first time I caught myself in there, I was like, there's Bones.
You know, we had several of our friends in the audience, and it was as the editor, it was my priority to make sure they were featured multiple times. Like Mark and Amber. Mark looked like Jacob, you know Mark. I don't know if anybody else knows Mark, but he looked like a cross between, like, what did he look like, babe?
Like Lestat, the guy from the room.
Yeah, he looked like Lestat mixed with the guy from the room.
Tommy Wiseau.
Yeah.
Tommy Wiseau.
Tommy Wiseau's Dracula.
But that, yeah, it was, I mean, that was, again, that was all Emma, and it was just fun for me to just observe, like, it's always fun for me to observe what Emma can just like create and assemble. She has this ability to get people to gather. And it's something I've never been able to do that. Nobody fucking likes me. So I can't get anybody to show up anywhere. But Emma has this ability to just get people to show up. And, you know, when you're there and you're looking at the wide shot, you're seeing all these people like, wow, this is fucking cool, man. So kudos to Emma on that.
Yep. Oh, it was great pulling up. I think it was like 11 a.m. on a Sunday or something, and like going, is this the right place? And then just seeing a bunch of people in random like monster outfits. And you guys encouraged like people to do their own look and stuff, so everyone was different and unique and like various levels of like, you know, just ingenuity in there. It was so cool to, it was like, oh yeah, no, this is definitely a spot. Look at all these monster kids running around.
John and I have a story I'm not sure we told you, but after the shoot, I was dressed up as Jason Voorhees in a suit with holding a fake machete, and Jonathan like you were dressed as a skeleton, right?
Yeah, and I had a top hat thing.
Yeah, and you had the skeleton, and I was with my buddy Jared, who was the Invisible Man, so we were hanging out outside after the shoot, and a cop car pulled up right in front of us. Like, they, you know, they did like a UE to pull into the street, and they pulled down their windows like, hey, did somebody call the cops? And we kind of freaked out because we were dressed up as monsters and stuff, and they were just like, no. And they just kind of looked at us for a second. It's like, yeah, okay. And then they drove off.
Oh my God.
You would have thought that machete was real with how quickly Jacob threw that away from himself. Just like, gotta get rid of the weapons. It's a plastic weapon. Oh, we're standing here with a skeleton. I think we're
I was surprised.
Skeleton's not a threat. A machete might get you shot.
Yeah.
Even if it's a plastic one.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they'll shoot first and then investigate. Well, yeah.
Oh God.
Yeah. So yeah, no, it's just it was a weird moment.
That's crazy. Wow.
But still, it was fun to hang out with everybody as a real monster mash.
Yeah.
That was the monster mash, man.
Yeah. At that point, that was like our last full day of shooting. We were, you know, the whole crew was exhausted. So we're just like, you know, holding up. I was like holding up signs or like clap.
Yeah, it felt like being on an old-timey game show.
Right?
Well, you guys still had great high energy going. I can say you guys definitely did not look like, oh, this is it. This is the last bit. Let's just get through this. You guys were very enthusiastic, and it was very easy to feed off of that, you know?
Awesome. We're so excited to be done that we, like, got really stoned and went to Chili's to celebrate after.
Pretty much what we do every time we celebrate. Every time we get stoned and we go to Chili's.
Like white trash people that we are.
Hey, I love Chili's.
They got the baby back ribs.
My after shoot ceremony used to be going to Tommy's and just getting like all the chili. Just slap chili on everything. Burgers, fries. I don't care. No, I don't need a drink. We're just here for chili covered stuff.
Sir, I think you've had enough chili.
Never.
This is a family restaurant. You can't do that here.
So what do you guys have coming up soon as well? I know, Ama, you have a couple of shorts that you're in post and have ready to go soon. You want to let us know about a couple of those?
Yeah, for me coming up, I did just shoot a short film called Beatrice and Dante, which is like sort of a weird cross between Demeter and Persephone, the Greek mythology of like trying to bring her out of hell, and also Dante's Inferno. And it's all shot in like black light. So it's basically just like a stoner metal video.
Nice. At the end of the day.
Very visual.
I did that. I have a fashion show coming up for Midsummer Scream. That's like a 60s beach party, but horror. And awesome. I am trying to get a couple features made. And I think that's probably all I'm doing. What are you doing, Brandon?
If anybody out there is rich and wants to invest, Emma needs money to make her features.
Yeah.
Yes. Give Emma money.
Give her money.
Hashtag give Emma money.
I'm toying with the idea of doing like a Kickstarter, but I don't know if people would give me money.
Oh, they would. They would.
I don't know. It's one of those things like, how much can you realistically raise from that unless you're like a cool person?
You're cool.
I mean, I know a guy in Texas who's producing a feature, and he made his goal of 10,000, which, you know, in the grand scheme of things, isn't that much, but you know, it's 10,000 more than he had before.
Exactly. My goal is like 50, which feels like so much.
That might be a little out of Kickstarter range.
Yeah.
That's investor range. Yeah.
That's why you run two Kickstarter campaigns.
You either do a Kickstarter and an Indiegogo.
Yeah.
And a GoFundMe.
The trifecta. If it's good enough for healthcare, it's good enough for movie making.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, this country.
Ooh.
Yeah.
The GoFundMes that bother me are the ones that are like, oh, help me fix the air conditioning on my car.
Yes.
That's not what GoFundMe is for.
GoFundMe is healthcare, damn it.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
That's sad.
Okay, well, that's a whole conversation.
Yeah, Jacob, you're not wrong, though. You're not wrong.
I've always wanted to do a GoFundMe to buy me a pair of pants.
just a pair of pants?
Yeah, I just thought that would be, because I'm terrible at buying pants for myself. Shirts, I have so many shirts, but pants, like, it's a struggle. And I feel like that would be a good motivator, just like, you know, $50. And if someone donates like 100, then I'll get a pair of JNCOs and do a photo shoot for them, you know, or something. That was always the plan.
Please? Oh, God. Like some of the JNCOs with like flames at the bottom or something.
The big flared out legs.
Yeah. Maybe coming to GoFundMe soon. Buy Korea some pants.
You know, throw in buy Korea some sleeves.
And, never. People will donate. Never. That would make negative money. People would be requesting money from me if I started wearing sleeves.
I'm team no sleeves too. Like, I cut the sleeves off like every shirt that I own. So yeah.
Brandon, we cut you off on what you're working on now. Yes. We know about New Hands. What else is going on?
Yeah, I'm in post-production right now on my Just Scare Me, which is called Cruise Control, which stars Amber Kloss and my buddy Tom Jones, who was also in New Hands. It's something that's definitely a little out of the wheelhouse for me. I'm super, super stoked for people to see it. Outside of that, I think after this Just Scare Me, the plans are to shift to a bigger project, like another feature film or something, which is something I've been working on in the background for a while now. There are several projects I'm eyeing. I'm pretty sure I know what I want to do, but it's kind of between two things right now. And I'm just super excited for that. I also have this project with Amber Kloss and Galen Howard, which is a band called Die Nacht Phantom. And we just played our second show ever last Saturday, I think. But that was super fun. We played that at the Elysian in Echo Park. And that's sort of like our German synth pop band, which is just pure fun and pure silliness. And I would be on the lookout for some more music and for some more live dates in the future for that.
Cool. Yeah. And I've loved their shorts, the shorts you've done with them for Just Scare Me, which I think is kind of the origin story for that band.
Exactly. Yeah. They started out as just my, you know, my entries into Just Scare Me. There was, you know, just something I did just for fun. And that's how I basically approach everything. If I'm not having fun and I'm not enjoying it, there's zero reason for me to do it. If I'm not making money off of it, it needs to be fun, you know? So, that's sort of where that project is right now. It's not at the center of my attention, but, when there are things in the work, I have another song coming and we're going to do another video, and yeah, eventually, hopefully we're going to release a full record and do a little tour and, you know, have just, again, just have as much fun as possible with it.
Cool. Before we get out of here, let's hear from Amalia about Poltergeist and Paramours. What's new with that? I see you designed a Freddy's Revenge button up.
Oh yeah. I've been unfortunately, I finally got bit by the COVID bug this past week.
Oh.
And so I've sort of just been stuck in the house in bed. I was like watching the It movies, and I saw, you know, Richie's button up, and I was like, why have I never made those? I make that style of shirt. I have the ability to make my own fabric. So then I just sat there and started designing those. And
well, Emma, you discovered that, right? You discovered that shirt in It Chapter 2 was a reference to Nightmare 2, right?
Oh, yeah. Back in the day when the movie first came out, I posted it and then it ended up everywhere. I was like, because like, that's like one of my weird gifts is knowing when wardrobe is like an homage to something else. Like I have an eye for that for some reason.
You totally caught it.
A useless talent. And
mine is detecting Wilhelm screams in movies.
Yeah, oh, I love Wilhelm screams.
I can hear They're him a everywhere. Mile away.
Yeah, I saw a Lightyear yesterday. They used one there.
Yes. Oh, really?
Oh, I bet.
Yeah.
I made a Haosu bathing suit.
I saw that. That's great.
The internet seems to be like really stoked about it. Sure.
It's going to be the look of the season.
Apparently. Sometimes I'll make stuff and I'll be so excited and nobody will give a fuck. And then I'll make something because I think it's funny and I don't think anyone will care. And that's the thing that sells. I'm releasing a Manhunter shirt on Monday that I'm really excited. Like, personally, I'm excited about that. I don't know if anyone else likes that movie, but it's one of my favorites. So, oh,
hell yeah. Oh, yeah.
There's fans out there.
Yeah.
That's my favorite Hannibal Lecter movie. I mean, don't get me wrong, Silence is a very close second, but yeah, Manhunter just visually is just delicious. Just,
I mean, come on, Tom Noonan.
Oh.
Tom Noonan is like one of my favorite actors of all time.
Oh, yeah. Tom Noonan.
Have you seen Anomalisa?
Yeah.
He's everything in that, except for the two leads. Yeah.
Oh, so good. And then
Tom Noonan world.
Come on. Last Action Hero and Monster Squad.
Yeah. Oh, man.
One of the best Frankenstein's monsters.
We have this like tradition of like every Christmas, Brandon will get me an action figure of somebody who should not have an action figure, if that makes sense.
But it's always an actor. It's an actor that Emma loves.
So yeah, like I have like a Vincent D'Onofrio one. I have a Ving Rhames action figure, and I have a Tom Noonan last action hero. I was so fucking stoked to get that. It was the coolest.
That's incredible.
Yeah. So
there's also going to be a Poltergeist and Paramore's fashion show. Poltergeist and Paramore's booth at Midsummer Scream this year. All kinds of Poltergeist and Paramore stuff happening.
So much.
Cool. Yeah, and you know, I wear my vest at work at the Arrow almost every day, and I get so many compliments on Def Faults Records Phantom of the Paradise vest, and people ask me, oh, where did you get that vest? And I always point them to Poltergeist and Paramore.
Oh, thank you. I got a whole stack of stuff to give you this week when I see you.
Oh yes, no, I'm very excited for getting my back order.
Yeah, it's like a stack. Like I have a Jacob stack.
Because I have fine taste in fashion.
One of our guests a few weeks back, we had Kevin Von Esper, who's making a movie about Haunted Garage. And we were talking with him about fashions and stuff, and we directed him to Poltergeist and Paramore's. I don't know if he's ordered anything or if he, you know, but he was loving it when we showed it to him, where he was all about it. So I don't know if that went anywhere, but we tried.
Oh yeah. I mean, I saw photos of the house bikini set pop up in random groups, you know.
It's
that,
crazy. Yeah. I just posted a picture of one that I'd finished, and like every time that I do that, it's like I think right now it's up to like 6,000 or 7,000 retweets. And I'm like, oh, really? Wow. Of everything I've made, this is the one thing. That and the Scream skirts that I make, the Tatum ones, I cannot
Emma's got some cool news about that. I don't know if she can say. There's definitely a cool thing I know that you guys don't know, but is super fucking cool about that Scream skirt. That's all we can say.
Well, I'll cut this part out so that no one gets in any
trouble.
Oh,
leave it in. Leave the tease in.
Oh, okay. Leave the tease in? Okay, sure.
Well, the cool thing is like Emma made these skirts that are based off of the skirt from the first movie. It's super popular skirt. Emma's the only person on the internet who has them. Emma's the only person in the world who has these skirts. They don't make them anymore. It's just another testament to why Emma Lee is so badass, you know?
No, I did. I hired an artist to like painstakingly recreate that fabric. And that was not easy because if you guys know the skirt I'm talking about, it's like a sort of digi, like 90s tie-dye almost.
Yeah. Very trippy looking.
And it's just like, I tried for years to find fabric that looks similar and nothing existed. So I eventually hired someone who does those kind of like fabric manufacturing designs to make it for me. And, you know, I thought it was just going to be for a few friends who really wanted it. And it's definitely like one of the, I can't keep them in stock. And, you know, it's like, it's convention season, so every girl ever is like, I want it right now.
Well, how many runs of the Black Christmas sweater have you done? Have you done two of them?
I'm on my second one. Okay. If you're listening and you want one, please order it because it cost me more than a car to get them.
Oh. It did.
Oh, yeah. It's a whole thing to get those made. But yeah, we're on our second run and I don't know if I'll do it again after this because it's a lot of work. It's a lot of money. But they're in my personal opinion, they're like the perfect recreation of that sweater.
There you go. And this may be the last run. So if you want one, Poltergeist and Paramore's.
Yes. Pre-order. They ship in November.
There you go. Just in time for Christmas.
Just in time. Yep.
Yeah. The perfect sweater for, you know, sitting by the fire about to get slayed by Billy.
It's one of those things, like every time I watch that movie over the years, it's like, man, I wish I could get that sweater. Why has nobody ever made that sweater? I was like, why don't I make that sweater? Yeah.
If only you knew a designer who could.
If only you knew someone who would put the massive amounts of time into recreating this.
Well, I can't take all the credit. Rosie Keller, Jared Rivet, I'm sure y'all know him. His partner is she design sweaters for like Mod Cloth, and like, you know, she's a sweater designer, she does knits. And so I was like, can you help? And she's like, fuck yeah, I can help. So it's really, she did the hardest stuff. I just paid all the money.
Well, some would say that is the hardest part, coming up with the money. But yeah. Okay, well, thank you guys for joining us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah,
great to hear about all your projects, and always a pleasure. So come on back anytime. Now, now you're a friend of the podcast too, Brandon. So,
yeah. Oh man, it was so much fun. Thank you guys so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me,
Jay and Jonathan.
Wait, when are we gonna get an Ion Horror slushy machine?
Right. Oh, I dream of the day.
It's still. We're still working on it. We're trying to get the actual icy out here, which is hard to get one of those from the East Coast out to California.
Yeah, our signature flavor will be eyeball orange.
Yes.
We won't settle for a 7-Eleven one. That's for sure. No.
Bullshit.
All right, cool. So we're going to call this an episode. So our theme song is by Restless Spirit, so go give them a listen. And our artwork is by Chris Fisher, so go give him a like. Where can people find you two, Brandon and Emma? We know Poltergeist and Paramore is for Emma, but...
Yeah, I made it really easy for people. My production company is Burbank Cinema Club. Anything you want to know about me, type in BurbankCinemaClub.com. That'll link you right to my Instagram. That's got basically any project I'm working on or have coming in the pipeline. I'm always talking about it on Instagram. So that's where I would find any of my up-to-date news. Of course, you know, be on the lookout for new hands later this year. I'll be posting about it, but that's about it for me. BurbankCinemaClub.com.
Cool. Emma?
You can find me on pretty much all social media as Miss Emma Leah. And I post a lot of political stuff and really bad jokes. So if you like dad jokes and Democratic politics, hit me up.
You know, we got a podcast review that called us liberal left grifters.
Wow.
You fit right in.
Push your agendas.
The liberal left, I will wear that with pride, but I don't know where they get grifters. It's not
we're not asking for money.
Yeah, I don't know.
We're not telling them to try and buy brain pills.
Wait, we get money for this? I've just been paying you guys in spare digital codes that I get from Blu-ray.
Can I be paid in NFTs?
You can find us at Ion Horror on any of the socials or at ihorror.com, which is the site we all call home. So that's it. So yeah, let's get the hell on out of here. We will see you all in a couple of weeks. So thank you again, Brandon and Emma.
Thank you.
So for me, thanks, James Brandon. J. Edwards.
I'm Jacob Davison.
I'm Jonathan Correa.
I am Brandon.
I'm Emma Leah.
Keep your eye on horror.